Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. Let's get going in celebrating industry heroes. You know, the women and men of manufacturing, the women and men of industry, and all things in between. You are bold, you are brave, you dare greatly, and you are changing the world through your innovation, and you're changing lives. That's why this podcast platform is here. That's why we celebrate you. Yep, it doesn't get any better than that. All right, in the hot seat for this particular, you know, podcast, we got a gentleman by the name of Thomas Didier. That's Didier, but it's spelled D-I-D-I-E-R. All right. He is with N4EAM, and he has got some mad skills. So let's get a going. Yeah. Another great. So here's the funny thing. So here I am. I was with PricewaterhouseCoopers. We primarily in the utility space. That is my background. I was a journeyman lineman, climbing towers, all that good stuff. So it was a natural fit. So I was with Pricewaterhouse, and we were deploying systems and, you know, enterprise systems, just like everything else. This was some time back. And one of the topics that I always like is talking about how do you deploy systems today. And what's interesting, it's getting easier, but the same challenges always exist. It always gets down to people and culture, but the systems, the technology is far more flexible, robust, powerful. You can pull out data analytics in a better way. You can link all of these legacy systems together, and it's not going to, you know, I mean, you still have to map the stuff out, but it's not going to create heartache like it did when I was deploying, if you could believe this, PeopleSoft and Indus Passport. They don't even exist, but boy, did, you know, they were at the cutting edge at that particular time. All right. So another question somebody asks me is like, Scott, and it happens all the time. Happens every, I don't know, all the time, whenever I get, the question is, why do you podcast? Why do you do what you do? And I've been wrestling with that. I've been like, I have fun and I meet great people. But you know what it gets down to? I really take joy in helping people, helping companies succeed in some way, shape, or form, doing my little part with this particular platform, spreading the good news of what industry does in our lives, in the lives around the world. And it just gets down to I like helping. And many of the individuals, in fact, all of the individuals that have been on this particular podcast have that, we share that same spirit, that spirit that we want to help. And it's a great feeling. And I want to do my part. And as such, you need to get on the Industrial Talk podcast. You need to. And it's a good time. And it gets your message out. All you have to do, easy peasy, is just go out to industrialtalk.com. Contact us. And you know who you're going to talk to? Yeah, that's right, me. I'm warm and fuzzy. I'm not threatening by any stretch of the imagination. So I really do. I think you have an obligation, especially now, especially during this next normal, whatever we call it, to get that message out, to create a sense of hope and opportunity and a great vision for the future. That's what this is about. We do a lot of work in the background. We want to get your message out. Industrialtalk.com is the place where you start. And you know what? We just have a conversation. Don't twist arms. Don't do anything. I just think that industry is so important. It's so important to communities, families, our economy. And I believe that that story needs to get out because I like helping. Hey, that sort of rolled off the tongue. All right. The gentleman, again, let's get cracking here. The gentleman, he's a solutions architect. So right off the bat, you know he's smarter than I am. And Thomas, but he goes by Tom, Didier, he's with Infor. And we had a great conversation, but it was just like, you don't have to have a big bang in deploying these enterprise systems. You don't have to. You can, the technology today is wrapped around greatest flexibility, and Infor EAM just epitomizes that. They're a leader. Don't get me wrong. They're a leader when it comes to this. And the team behind it, constantly innovating, constantly pushing the envelope, constantly trying to develop a system that meets your needs today, tomorrow, and on into the future so that you can be a success. How can you complain about that? You can't, right? All right. Enjoy the interview with Tom Didier. Tom, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. I'm absolutely excited about this conversation. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and it's great to be here.
Yeah. All right, listeners, we're going to have a conversation once again about Infor EAM. We're going to talk about the flexibility of the system. And it doesn't have to be an all or nothing type of implementation. Tom comes with a tremendous amount of street cred when it comes to this solution and looking at your business. Tom, give us a little background for the listeners out there of who you are and why you're such a great professional.
Well, I've been working with EAM now for the last 10 years, but been with Infor 13 this time, 10 years previously, and as an independent, 11 years in between.
I can't keep up the math. I don't know what it is. Is that 102?
Pretty much so. I've been programming since 74 in some way.
Yeah, it's got a good beard. But I'm telling you, what's great about it, and listeners, you got to respect this type of commitment to what he is doing. He's seen it coming from, you know, concept way back when, and then he's been a part of that conversation, and he's evolved into a really pretty robust system, Infor EAM. Did you do some other Infor products?
Yeah, I did mainframe payroll systems for a large bit of that time.
You know, for the younger listeners, they're saying, well, mainframe? What's that?
There's a lot more of them than people think.
I know. They're out there right now. They're still out there. And somebody was telling me, hey, does somebody have some Fortran or COBOL type of coding capabilities?
Got them both.
I'm going, what? Some people, they still need, yep, they still do. All right. One of the things that I've always been interested in is when somebody makes the decision to get an enterprise system, it's an enterprise, meaning it's everywhere, right? But, and then they make the decisions like it's all or nothing, everything else. Is that the right approach when you're starting to deploy? You make that decision, you make that financial commitment.
Yes and no. It depends on where you want to get to and how fast you want to get there. Is your current system going to be available for a period of time? Are you currently
when you say current system, your legacy? It's like yes. This is where we're at. We are here over here. We're trying to go over there.
Right. And also, it's the amount of resources you can contribute to the project. You sometimes can't put enough people to the project to get you to the all-in portion of it. So, you know, at that point, you try to get them up and running. They want to do their work orders. They want to keep track of their inventory. They want to get all that stuff in place. So you sort of try to guide them to start gathering the other information for the analytics that they'll be able to use later when they are ready for those next steps.
Yeah, but that has to come with some thought because there's probably, when you start to deploy the system, these are non-negotiables. You need to do this. You need to do this. This is sort of the bare minimum if they want to approach it that way, right? It's like there's a bare minimum, then we can start adding on.
Yeah. Well, the simple thing is our problem codes. When you close a work order, you want to report what was the nature of the problem. What was the fix? Was there a reason or a cause for it? That's stuff that I can analyze later to start looking for trends to see why something failed. If I don't gather that information later, I can't use it. So, but just getting people to set that up at the front end can sometimes be a little bit difficult. One, if they're not used to doing it, but two, you're trying to lead them to something bigger, right?
Yeah. But is there a reluctance to do that? I mean, you've got it because you don't want to head down that road and you didn't capture that data. And now you're going to try to, you know, expand or grow it or, you know, do what you need to do.
Okay, well, look at a place where basically all they did was handed out a work order. They wrote down, you know, what the changes they made, turn it back in again. And that's it, the end of the day. Now you're trying to get people to do a little bit more. And not everybody's necessarily qualified to make the determination. What was the real problem? Okay, say a machine overheated. All right, went in there and I found that, why did it overheat? Well, you know, it dropped power because it overheated because the filter was dirty. Okay, I can get to that point. But if I start to see that I've got several of those based on capturing this information, maybe I'll look at it and say, well, those PMs that I was doing every 6 weeks, maybe I need to do it every 4 weeks. That's the type of information that you can gather as you're going along here. Start gathering that information and use it going forward.
Is there a problem when you have, let's say, your legacy system and then you're deploying a new system and you get that sort of bipolar system input type of environment? Do you have any issues with that? Because I can imagine somebody just coming in, pencil whip, I don't care, I'm just going to enter data. And then you got crappy data going into your system.
What's the nature of every implementation if they have a legacy system? They're used to doing what they've been doing, and there's a tendency to try to recreate their current system in the new system.
That listeners, is absolute sage insight. You're absolutely correct. So you take your legacy and then you stick it in the new system. That ain't going to fly.
No, it's not going to fly, but I mean, there are elements of it that may be good. It could be things that are doing perfectly now that you want to carry that those processes forward.
Yeah.
But you also want them to take advantage of the capabilities that they are getting.
But that requires a lot of education as well. You know, you're out there. This is how I used to wander around my facility. I grab my PM information. I do it this way. And maybe that's not the right way to do it too. I mean, you've got a little, you got a baseline implementation level, then you got to train to that so that you're collecting the data that you need to so that you can begin to stack on additional functionality, right?
Where's the majority of your workforce with this system? They're actually hands-on to workforce. They're doing the work. So they're the ones that you've basically got to get up to speed, let them enter the information they need, track their time if you want to know how long it takes. Yeah. Well, here's another example of something that you've got to train people to. A PM is what? A set unit of work that you're going to repeat over a regular recurring frequency to do something specific.
Right.
What happens if you find something else while you're doing this PM? Do you fix it? Well, not as part of the PM. You write up an additional work order, right? Because you want to track that separately. If I did it and booked that time as part of the PM, I am skewing my time spent on PM. I'm overstating that. I'm increasing the cost because I may have the parts point of that. And I'm losing the analytics of saying, oh, well, I've got another problem here. The PM, address the PM and do a follow-on work from PM type work order.
Yeah, because generally speaking, people are going to say, hey, I'm out here at this motor. And this pump over here has got a, you know, squeaky sound coming from it. I'll just take care of that too. I'm here. I'm taking that, but I got to just, let me just take that. Tick, 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 tick. Let me close out this PM. All of a sudden you've got some, you know, it's bad data. It's not accurate, period.
Well, it's not that it's bad data, but now my PM, instead of taking 2 hours, took 3 hours.
Right.
And as a scheduler going forward, I'm looking at, wait a minute, they should be taking 2 hours. I'm taking 3 hours here, 4 hours there, 5 hours there. How do I schedule my people?
Yeah, see, my thoughts are just constantly flying in. It's like you have to really change the way people approach work, and you've got to keep at it. You can't, it's not just deploy the system, let it go. You have to deploy the system, educate, re-educate, keep on doing it, make checks into making sure that things are fine, right? Are we doing it right? Adjust accordingly. Is that correct?
That's pretty much it, yes. You definitely want to get the information you can also use going forward. So it's not just fix it, say I fix it and I'm done.
Right.
What else can I provide to the picture?
And Ed, culturally speaking, I know that if I'm a maintenance guy, if I'm out there in the field, if I'm doing all this stuff, yeah, I got it. I love riding in on that white horse. Just save the day. And you're really trying to not have them ride in on that white horse.
Well, at the same time, you're trying to minimize keystrokes. A maintenance person is there to turn the wrench. They are not there to fill out paperwork. Mm-hmm. So you can't bog them down with ridiculous layers of paperwork.
I'm sure they'll say that too. They don't hold back, do they?
Not in the least.
Not in the least. So there's a fine line between, hey, I got to collect the data and not, you know, creating enemies on the other side of that whole equation, right?
Well, I have noticed a trend that it used to be you would just close out your work orders and you'd be done. You know, that would be it. Now it's you put your work order in some sort of a status that says, hey, I'm done with what I need to do. If somebody needs to, you know, pass, you know, take a look at it and say, analyze what the problem was. Oh, you changed this part. Therefore, this was my problem code.
Who's responsible for that?
That can be a supervisor or a planner, somebody more familiar with making sure, because sometimes a maintenance guy just can't decide which. And you would rather a good answer be put in than the first one off the list.
So what you're saying is that, okay, I have to do a little repair. I got to do a little maintenance on this pump right there. Boom. As a maintenance professional, I can do the repair, but I don't have to sit there and try to figure out, right, create a dissertation on the asset. All I have to do is say, I've completed the work, some minimum type of detail, and then have somebody else sort of go back and say, yeah, that was
not necessarily. I wouldn't go there. The person doing the maintenance is always the one who's most knowledgeable of what's there. But is he necessarily the one to dig through a list of codes to tell you what it was, this one over this one?
No. You don't want that one.
Well, you know, if they're used to doing that type of work, and some industries very much so, you know, especially heavily regulated ones where it's going in a book that's following that piece of equipment its entire life cycle, yeah, they'd be very good at that.
How does the system, because it happens, we're humans, it's just what happens out there. How can the system tell me that some people are, for lack of a better term, pencil whipping the information, like I'm hitting the same code? It's like I'm here, I'm hitting the same code, I'm not entering the data accurately. How do I know that?
What you'd probably look for is most cases when you look at a code, there's a drop-down list. They click on something, it gives them a list of options. If they pick the first one on the page, they're going through the motions. So, you know, you put your harmless one up top. If they're picking the NA, you're not getting an honest effort.
That's good. That's a good strategy. That drop down, you know that's the case. I'm going to go, okay, drop down. Because it's so much work to go down a little bit on a drop down. But they do. They pick the top one. You're right.
And it's not necessarily for intent. You pick the first one you see that looks reasonable.
Right.
There may be a better one coming along. And I think in some cases, having a secondary review, that person might be more familiar with all those other options. So, you know, you're not faulting the first guy going through. You're just saying somebody taking a second look at it may say, oh, this one is a little bit more applicable to the situation from the future analytical end.
Yeah, see, and I think that would be a great process to deploy, right? I mean, you get the maintenance professional out there, skilled professional, but then that individual is probably saying, I got to get this done because I got to go over here. I got to go over here. Maybe I've got a lineup of work that I need to get cracking on. And yeah, I think that's a really good little step to have to make sure that somebody's in there saying, ah, okay, we'll just adjust this here. Get the data accurate. You need it. You need the data accuracy so you can make some great decisions.
That's the goal.
And if you're not, I mean, you got a system, a powerful system like Infor EAM, that's where the gold is. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so here's the deal. It's never all lollipops and pink elephants and cotton candy, even though we would like it to be that way. Tell me, what are some real roadblocks when you're doing these implementations?
Wow. I'm not really sure if I should answer that one because, sometimes you just don't have the resources assigned to you.
Yes.
From the client end to do everything that needs to be done. Sometimes they think that we're supposed to be doing more than what we are supposed to be doing, you know, and we're supposed to be teaching them how to maintain their own system.
It never works that way, right? It doesn't. You need a team. You need a team of individuals dedicated for a system like this. But correct me if I'm wrong, greater value comes when you've got the frontline individuals providing insights into the true functionality of what they do and have that system be able to reflect or optimize whatever they do, right?
Yes, but you also have the problem if you assign too many people. Now you've got a room full of people that have to make a decision and have repeated meetings to make the decision.
Okay, the question has to be asked. Well, how do you come on that, like, that sweet spot of the right amount of people with the right executive sponsorship, with the right for system implementation success?
Let me know when you find out the answer to that one.
That's why I asked.
I don't know if it's possible.
I don't know if either it is. It's always, we got too many people. And then you get rid of some of the people. Now we don't have enough people. And it's just because of the ebb and flow of the work.
Well, and you also have the problem of getting the right people. You'd love to have more of the guys with their hands on the wrench, but,
Their hands are on the wrench.
Yes, they've got to be doing what they need to be doing.
Right.
So getting the right mix of people is really critical.
It's just like anything else. It always comes down to the people and culture with any of these systems. The tech is the tech, right? N4 EAM is a flexible, powerful system, and it's constantly improving, all of that wonderful stuff. But if you don't have the right people and culture supporting the implementation, it can only be so successful.
Well, that's why we try to do things like conference room pilots, you know, where you sit there and prototype out the solution you want to implement and you bring in the right people to review it. And, you know, if you get that completely disgusted look from the maintenance people, you know you missed it.
Yeah, it's funny because I've been in that conference room at one point or another, and I've had that look from that that maintenance person. It's like, wow, yeah, right. I didn't get it.
And normally it's like, yeah, right. Yeah.
So how do we adjust it? How do we modify it? Please help us understand. But you guys, you would go through, sort of, you would flow out. Let's say if I'm doing a baseline implementation, for lack of a better term, I'm not going full bore. I have a strategy to get there, but right now I've got to be here. And these are non-negotiable. This is where I need to be from a systems perspective. The majority of the work has to be done up front before you even begin to journey into the implementation.
Oh, yeah. You're going to set up all your assets, get the majority of the information out there. You're going to have all your parts, all that defined, all your suppliers so that you can order more. All that stuff is done at the front end. You have to have that in place before you go live. You should have all your PM schedules set up, be ready to plug in those dates. You know, at a certain date, we're now cutting over and we're going forward from this, you know, with this new system from this date. Yeah, that's all front end type work.
And you want to do that up front. You want to be very thorough because you don't want to start to implement a system and then sort of go, nah, rats. And you don't want to go backwards. You want to keep on moving forward. And that requires that planning up front big time.
Correct. That stuff should all be in place before you go live.
But it's never the case. Sometimes it's not the case, is it?
You'd hope it is.
Well answered, politically.
You got to have that in place.
Right. Because it's so funny. We humans, you know, we want to get it done. We never have enough time. We're always so busy. And yet you've got a system, the system that requires your attention. But then if you don't give it attention, it's going to cause some friction within the culture and the organization. And but it happens all the time, all the time. It never stops. It's like, come on. Do it right. And then you won't have anybody, you know, you'll have some complaining, but not everybody complaining.
But what is doing right?
Yeah.
You know, it depends how much you want to do with the front end. Do you want to set yourself up for the equipment surveys at the front end? Well, I may not need that to go live. I could do that after I'm live.
But you don't do it after you go on live. Sometimes people get busy, don't you?
That's why we have phases. We'll do a phase one, phase two, phase three. Phase one is get them up and running, doing what they need to do to be keep their production going.
Yeah.
Right? And phase two is starting to clean up what we've done wrong, haven't done up to the final state. And phase three is start adding the niceties. Yeah. However many phases you want.
Hey, as long as everybody's committed to the phase approach, I'm all fine. Because typically it's like, get it up and running. It's okay. We've got this fire to put out over here. That time. And in the world of COVID, everybody's like, hey, I'm trying to survive. I'm trying to rebuild. And everybody seems like they're just, you know, squished for time.
Well, the other thing with phases is you've always got a thing called scope creep that you've got to
work on. Good point. Good word.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, eventually you get to a point to say, oh, that little nicety, you can do it with the base system and this is how. But if you want that little thing, that's going to have to be a phase two item.
Yeah. See, that's funny because I remember hearing the term scope creep. Everybody creeps on the scope. It's this, but anyway, we were at this, we think this would be great. We know this would be great. And, you know, and it just keeps on going and going and going. And it requires leadership to say, no, can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And these are the reasons why we can do it this way here, but it's going to have to be something over here, phase, whatever.
You sometimes have to say no on something. It's cause your go live date to slip if you try to do this. It is out of scope for the project. It's not in the contract, whatever the case may be.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, you got to have, first off, have the courage, the leadership to say no, or to be able to say, yeah, we could do it, but we got to cut this over here because our date is this date. We got to go live. We can sort of manage that project that way.
A line I've heard many times is it possible to do this? And I'll respond with, yes, how much are you willing to spend?
There's a lot of you out there. I've heard that. I've had that conversation too. And yeah. And that same statement happened. Mm-hmm. All right. Hey Tom, we're going to have to wrap it up. This was a great conversation. Now, I want to get a hold of you. How do I want to get a hold of you?
Yeah, you've got my LinkedIn information there. That would be the best way to put it.
All right, listeners, you need to get a hold of him. You're going to go out to. And Didier. How about that? Yeah. That's his last name, Tom Didier. His LinkedIn profile says Thomas. And you will not see a picture because Thomas doesn't have a picture, which I highly encourage him to have a picture. And it needs to be a part of this phase.
We'll look into it.
You'll create a plan of attack.
Correct.
On how to upload that photo. All right. Reach out to him. Tom, you were absolutely a joy, man. I appreciate it. Great. It's like a walk down a memory lane of when I used to implement systems. It's like, but that was years ago, and they're still having the same come on.
Yep.
Somebody progress the conversation. It never happens. Do you have conversations where people say, hey, I just want to pull it off the shelf? Do they still say that?
You know, a lot of people think that software packages are still that way. Large packages are that way. But it's configurable. Yes, it's configurable. Yeah. It's not Microsoft. I don't pick one out, you know, what time zone I'm in and I'm done.
It's so true. I just want it off the shelf. So, okay, I don't know what that means, but I guarantee you, we're going to have scope creep with that conversation. All right, thank you very much, Tom. Listeners, we're going to have all the contact information for Tom out on Industrial Talk Podcast, and I'm going to wrap it up on the other side. So do not go away. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
How about that? Tom Didier did not disappoint. Loved the conversation. Loved exactly what he was talking about. How about that for a flexible system? How about that for a great approach to your organization to be successful? You need it. I mean, if you're going down this world of digital transformation, right? This industry 4.0, need a powerful enterprise system to be able to enable that, right? And I think N4EAM and the team at N4EAM has you doggone covered. All right, I'm here to help. I want you to go to industrialtalk.com. I want you to connect with me. The water's warm. I'm not going to sit there and, you know, strong arm you on any way. Your story needs to be told. So please, ask me. I'm here to help. I'm here. No strings. That's why we're great. All right. Industrial Talk. Be bold, be brave. Dare greatly. You're changing the world. Hang out with people that are like that. We will be back with another great interview shortly.